them big seat, jump on them big seat. It's a free ride. Jump on them big seat, jump on them big seat.
One morning in 2009, I did a double take, there were 50 bucks in line. I walked across the street and fell to a knee. I caught my breath and saw the word
Bixie.
At first it was confusing, but I read the rules in detail. Put my card in and took advantage of the seat sale.
Hello and welcome to the November 2013 episode of the Bike Portland podcast about bikes and low car life in PDX. I'm Lillian Kerbake.
I'm Jonathan Maas.
And I'm Michael Anderson. Each month, the three of us go in-depth on a subject that matters to Portlanders who get around without a car.
And we do it in the time that it takes the average Portlander to get to work.
This month, we're talking about something that does not exist.
Something that has never existed.
Something that will never exist.
No, that's not true. Something that is going to exist very soon, like next spring.
We hope.
A public bike-sharing system in Portland.
A full-fledged one, not the yellow bikes that some Portlanders remember, but one that requires memberships, credit cards, the whole deal.
33 U.S. cities have them, and hundreds of cities around the world. Why don't we?
Why should we?
How could bike sharing change this city?
And what new innovations might make it work?
Enjoy the show.
It was just another day, drowning my troubles with a griffin when a scene shark passed me by like Bruni Surin. Red and chrome tinted out like it was magic. I loaded up the Bix and was set, I gots to have it. What? Now it's 100 miles of running. Traveling got bikes up in Boston and London. Grippy riding straight April till October, so just like KRS-One, the bridge is over.
Thought it was a trend, it may have been a stint, now it's 2010. We reduced the carbon footprint. What can I say? It's a true Quebec invention. Now get him to NDG.
Oh, quick program note. We're officially calling this the Bike Portland podcast now, and we have some plans to update the logo, so it'll be looking a little different. Don't worry, though, your subscription will stay the same, and we'll keep talking about low-car issues in depth every month. We're also working on some technical improvements and moving over to a nice little studio, so we think you'll enjoy all those updates.
Great. Well, let's talk about bike share.
Yeah.
Where is it? Is Portland ever going to get it?
I've spent so little time in cities with bike share that I feel like I haven't, I don't even fully understand how great it could be. You guys have been there a bit more.
It can definitely be great. It's like this transformative thing. I've done it in, D.C. was the best example. And I think for a lot of people think that D.C. is the best example in the U.S. It's certainly the most successful from a financial point of view and longevity point of view, although New York City's is coming up strong. But even if you haven't been there, I mean, the headlines and everything, it's just taken these cities by storm, the ones that have done it right.
It's really, I think the main thing for capital bike share in DC is that the argument that the way to make cyclists safer is to increase the number of cyclists on the roadway.
Right.
And you've just suddenly multiplied the number of cyclists on the roadway by two times in places like DC where there wasn't a huge number of cycling on the roadway. And you've created, compared to transit riding, we've talked about before, people identify more strongly once they start biking as a biking advocate. And suddenly you're creating, even if a tiny percentage of those people using bike share are biking, they want to start advocating for things. They want the roads to be safer for them, even when they're just using bike share to get from their office to lunch on a 5-minute jaunt. And when I've gone back and visited DC with a 2-year gap, when I was there in March, it's crazy what they've done. They have separated cycle tracks. You could go past the White House on cycle tracks on two sides. Like, the way things have changed in DC from just a couple years ago is really phenomenal. And a lot of that is just a big push towards cycling as a mode. But I think a lot of that has to do with the visibility due to Capital Bike Share.
Yeah, basically overnight, in some ways, it makes the case for cycling in a way that advocacy for decades can't do, because you're sitting here talking about what bicycling can do for a city. You're talking about it. You're trying to make the case. And then all of a sudden, bike share comes and thousands of people are on the bikes every day, and it just makes its own case.
Because it's so convenient to just jump on, jump off.
Yeah, you can't avoid it. I mean,
right. And then
so
you're like,
visible.
Oh, wait, this is a great way to do certain trips.
Absolutely.
As soon as you do that.
Right. And the bikes happen to be visually very striking. Mm-hmm. And that helps because it just makes it that much easier for folks in cars and other people in the city to see them and go, that's what a bike is all about. That's how people are using them. So it's pretty powerful.
So the DC system got going in 2009, 2010. And back when DC was just getting into this, we also had someone who's really into this, and that was Mayor Adams. Do you have the language that he used at the time, Jonathan?
Well, I know that he was very excited about it going all the way back to 2006. So the fact that we still don't have one here in Portland, I mean, we're going on, what, eight years now since we've been talking about
this? As long as I've been involved in bike advocacy in Portland, they keep saying that it's coming.
He was excited about this before Alto was excited about this.
And a lot of Commissioner Adams at the time, this is before he became mayor, he was transportation commissioner, and he first learned about it on a trip to Lyon, France, in their system in 2006. So he came back, and he was just really gung-ho. He wanted to be the first big city to get this sort of, you know, version 2.0 bike share system, the whole credit card shebang thing. And he wanted to, Portland to sort of lead the country and show this example. So there was all this rah-rah-rah about it. But it didn't quite work out the way that he had hoped.
Not quite, yeah. So we can talk a little bit about exactly how it works. So there are usually, I think it's up to 15 bikes at most of these stations. Then
some of them are bigger.
Yeah. Okay.
In DC, some of them are up to 45 bikes one station. Wow. Okay. Some of them cover like half a block in DC.
But they go into, they're sort of at these kiosks that usually sit on the sidewalk, and you have to like enter your credit card number, and then it tells you go to this stall and pull out this bike, and then you pull out that bike, and then you get to ride it for up to 30 minutes free if you have a membership.
The kiosks are on the sidewalk, but the bikes themselves are on the street. So they take away car parking when they implement them, or whatever the curbside use of that space was there. The bike stations are quite too large, I think, to give away the right-of-way to pedestrians, especially in Portland when we have very few places with wide sidewalks. Mm-hmm. And then the kiosks that you use will either be on that street side facility, or it will be on the sidewalk, sort of like a pay station when you park, you know, when you use like a smart park station. Okay. And the way it works is you usually have some sort of annual membership or a 1 or 5 day membership where you pay a flat rate fee. And then they're trying
like
to
$5 a day or $10
a day. Yeah. And then $70 a year. And then they're trying to incentivize using it for short trips. So usually under half an hour, some of the systems are under 45 minutes, the ride is free.
Right.
So in cities where there's a lot of bike share, some people actually engage in bike share hopping, and they'll, you know, just ride from station to station and check their bike back in and then get another one, because you can do that. And then there's a marginal cost that escalates for each half hour segment after that first half hour. So it'll be $2.
For most Portlanders, my impression is, according to the numbers that Alta had projected, it's going to be $75 a year for an annual membership, and then you get to use it up to 30 minutes free. And that's the way almost all of our trips are going to be in our local system, if we ever have one.
Right.
Yeah, and just to back up a bit, Alta is the company that Portland has ended up selecting to be the vendor of our system. And they're not working out the details. Alta's done quite a bit of planning for it already, just waiting on sponsorship money, because this thing is going to be paid for with private sponsorship to get out on the street. So all the back-end stuff's been paid for through a federal grant at this point. And now the holdup, I think, for the most part, is because Alta, the vendor for Portland system, is trying to line up a private sponsor.
Right. And this isn't the first, just to be clear, it's not like we've been waiting on sponsors for 8 years. There's been a number of roadblocks that have happened with Portland system. And I think that's the thing, is that when people are like, where is our bike share that we first started talking about in 2006? You have to realize it's not like it's been one process that got delayed by sponsors.
That's true.
It's been a whole host of things.
It's been the last year and a half or so. It's been delayed.
That's been the particular thing. But there's been Commissioner Fritz, who is a registered nurse by trade when she's not city commissioner. She was very concerned about helmets, and she really didn't want to approve it unless we were doing a study on how to integrate helmet rental or buying somehow into the system.
She wanted some sort of training, I think, or some sort of commitment that people that use them would be nice and not break the rules.
Right.
But that didn't stop us in the way, right? So we still don't, I mean, no, I think we overcame those concerns.
Right.
It's right. But there's a number of things that we've overcome in the past delayed the process.
Yeah, I mean, I think to say that we're just waiting for sponsorship money, I think would be glossing over and too simple of a narrative. I mean, you can't deny how the politics at City Hall has changed considerably since we had Commissioner Adams out there, you know, raising his fist and saying we want to be first. I mean, so I think there's a real lack of urgency, both politically to some degree, now that Mayor Adams is gone and that, you know, the makeup of City Hall has changed. I think there's, to some degree in Portland, a lack of public urgency, because there's definitely not consensus among even people that ride bikes in Portland, that this is something we should spend all this money on.
Right.
Some people think, oh, I have a bike, or it's not for me, or nobody's going to use it. There's a lot of
that. But we should spend all of the Fed's money on.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, right. So there's some lack of consensus publicly, and I think certainly lack of urgency politically. There's also, you know, Portland is a place that loves its process.
Buffy is my stakeholder, is assured.
You know, one interesting thing that might be worth mentioning in terms of, you know, maybe why they're waiting or they're not, you know, making this an urgent priority is that there may be some fear of liability in the sense of throwing all these bikes downtown when you have a Bureau of Transportation that has all but admitted that the downtown bike network is severely inadequate.
Right.
I mean, we really don't have infrastructure specifically for bicycling downtown. Back in 2008, I noticed today looking at some old stories about this, a quote from the Bureau of Transportation said, "Portland believes a successful bike sharing system is predicated on having at least a basic level of bike infrastructure to facilitate comfortable and safe bicycling by novice users," unquote. So they're referring to the central city. And, you know, right now, the PBOT's looking at a big plan to actually put some bike dedicated infrastructure downtown. So are they trying to hope that they get that plan in place and then they can put the bike share over that? You know, it's hard to say, but the bottom line is,
so this is marked bike lanes, physically separated bike lanes.
Exactly. I mean, right now we rely on people basically sharing the road with cars downtown, right? Because, oh, the cars are only going 12, 15 miles anyway. But
right.
That is not going to work for tourists. It's not going to work for...
Right. Yeah, they're all going to think that's insane.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I think a lot of this comes down to, you mentioned the lack of consensus in the bike community that this is a slam dunk for Portland's bike world. And I think that a lot of this comes down to what we talked about on the podcast like 5 months ago, the unbearable complacency of Portland when it comes to a lot of this bike stuff, which is... In D.C., this was, right, a huge push for a bike network that was very infantile. And in Portland, there's a lot of perception that, oh, well, we're number one, and we've been doing this stuff for so long, and we're a leader in this field, that the idea that bike share is more a pioneering way to get bike infrastructure than it is a part of a complete bike infrastructure network.
Yeah, exactly. When you're in a city where a lot of people think we just have the most amazing bike network in the world, and you have people trying to sell your bike share system by saying it's going to be transformative for bicycling,
right?
People are like, well, bicycling here is already awesome. It doesn't need to transform. Mm-hmm. That equals lack of, you know, political, I mean, sort of lack of public urgency.
Right. It's awesome for the 12% of us who do it regularly. Right.
Exactly.
Right.
But for better or for worse in Portland, those are the voices that dominate the conversation about bicycling.
Right. And they're the voices that often get things done when they want to push on something with bike stuff. And
exactly.
This is just not a priority.
And we don't, and there's nobody in City Hall who's standing up and saying, let's get bike share done. Let's go. This is going to be awesome.
Do you think that some of this has to do with the system being predominantly downtown, and that a lot of the voices that we see advocating for better cycling and extending the cycling network are focused on increasing cycling in areas that have less of it, like East Portland and outer North Portland and, you know, 42nd Colley area? Do you think that we would hear stronger voices for bike share if it was the current buzzword of equity?
I want to take that one.
If this is an equity thing.
So I, of course things are more popular if they have more resources dedicated to them, right? That's because they're more awesome when you have spend more money on them, right? And so we're talking about, like, do we have enough resources to make a great system in East Portland or in downtown? I would love to have it everywhere, but it pisses me off when people say that, like, because we can't have it everywhere, we can't have it anywhere. And that's all you're saying. I think that absolutely, of course, if we could put like a massive system, Paris-sized system all over the city, it would be really cheap compared to our transit system, for example.
What if we only had it in East Portland?
But
what if we were able to make the proposal be that this system only goes into place out in Foster Powell and Hazelwood? What if we really build this as the extension of the transit system we keep claiming that it is in areas where the most transit-dependent populations live? And do you think that we would have a greater citizen push among the advocates that have loud voices for it?
I would think so. I mean, that's been an interesting dynamic since this really got going and since the funding gates kind of opened up with that federal grant and the equity thing came into play. The issue with that dynamic is, even if we were to do that, if you were to sort of run it through the successful bike share algorithm, the chances of it succeeding in those places is just not as high as in the central city, because you just don't have the land use right now. You don't have the kind of streets that you need to make the system work. So, you know, it's kind of like, is that what advocates out in East Portland and other places want? Do they want to have something that is sort of designed to fail because it's just not, you know, the actual streets aren't ready for it?
Right.
Or, you know.
I think you should use tools that are right for downtown in downtown and tools that are right for East Portland in East Portland.
Exactly. Well, and I don't necessarily, but I don't think bike share isn't good for East Portland. A lot of people's fears in cycling in East Portland is that their bikes are going to get stolen, or that they don't have a good bike, or they don't have the resources to keep up their bike. And I think that one of the really awesome parts about bike share in those communities is that you completely avoid the, I have to keep up my bike. You avoid the my bike's going to get stolen part of it.
Right. And that brings up a good, the question of like, what kind of system are we talking about? I mean, if we're saying the kind of system that most of the major successful cities are using, like DC and New York City, if we're talking about that sort of system, it's not going to work in East Portland. But there's a lot of other new technologies and different kind of bike share systems that could very well work if you plopped it in the middle of Lentz or some other place. And they're smaller scale, but they still basically have the same tenets of bike share, which is basically free bikes for people to use. And there's, you know, some of those are some local innovations. There's certainly some others that are
Let's talk about them happening right now. That's great.
Yeah, there's one out that's going on out in Intel in Hillsboro that a couple of the engineers out there just got together, really mostly like an employee-led effort, although Intel had a little push from the start with the small amount of grant, but it's really sort of this employee-led effort called the Open Bike Initiative, which is a basically open source system that is really simple. They just bought a fleet of bikes. They set them up around two different buildings on the Intel campus to help with like last mile travel. And they basically, you just walk up to the bike has a number, you have your cell phone, you text that number to this number, and it gives you back the combination to the lock that locks the bike up, and you can take the bike out and use it and then return it back. That's a real simple system. They're actually using it right now on the Intel campus. Their version 2 system of that's gonna have a lot more robust technology that's going to actually potentially be game-changing and disrupt the market, where they're going to have their own sort of server-side stuff and client-side stuff. So they're going to have GPS, and they're going to be able to remotely unlock and lock the bikes, all self-contained on the bike without kiosks or any kind of like large physical infrastructure. So that thing holds a lot of promise, I think, the Open Bike Initiative, but there are definitely others.
So that would let me like find a bike. Like the way I find a car to go now, I would look on my phone, I would say, where's the nearest open bike?
Right, it's all self-contained. Each bike is basically its own kiosk.
Its own kiosk, right.
And
it, right. Yeah.
So
each
bike and it would be parked at some staple at 122nd.
Well, yeah, I think they envision smaller footprint projects, like for large corporate campuses, say like Nike would be great.
Yeah.
But you could definitely use it in like a regional town center, like Lentz or some other place. And essentially each bike is its own self-contained unit. It has GPS. It's got the electronics on board. It's like a rear rack thing that they've designed. It sits right on the rear rack, and it's got this really cool lock on it that, you know, can be unlocked through this central brain that sits back wherever the server is. But it's a neat project, and one of their main focuses is making it open source. So all the documentation lives online. They want people just to take it and start implementing it. It's sort of like the polar opposite of these massive,
right,
like, you know, the Montreal Big C,
right,
Altus systems that are proprietary and very expensive.
Right.
So,
yeah. That's great.
So, and that's not the only one of kind of those sort of individual bike kiosk Car2Go-esque systems, right? There's BitLock, which is now on Kickstarter right now, which is the exact sort
of... Actually, I think it's done with Kickstarter as of this episode.
Oh, is it? Okay.
Yeah.
So you can't go try
to get
one anymore. BitLock is essentially just a regular U-lock that will talk to your phone. So you're able to unlock your bike both remotely and have your cell phone in your pocket, and you're within proximity of your bike, it'll unlock your bike for you using the U-lock. It's a really cool thing. I'm excited to see it in person. Like,
and so this would let me like share my bike as if it were part of a system?
Yeah. So what you can do, the cool part, is you can authorize other people's iPhones to unlock your bike. So what I see this working really well with is established social infrastructure for bike sharing. So
you're talking about friendship?
That works too. that was a very sociologist way to describe it. No, I'm actually thinking of the kind of social websites like Spinlister. It's like Get Around for bikes. It allows you to rent someone's individual bike And I thought that combination U-locks were like the coolest invention when it came to running bikes out for spin lister, but this could be an even better innovation for that. I could see either the Open Bike Initiative or BitLock could work amazingly with Bicla, which is the community-based bike sharing system that they established in Guadalajara, which I saw when I was there for the Car Free Cities conference 2 years ago now, which you can listen to the podcast I did from Guadalajara way back in our archives. But the Bicla system is pretty cool because it's community run, and the way that it works is they get individual businesses to use this software that they've designed to check bikes in and out, and then the businesses sponsor essentially having a corral of bikes out in front of their businesses.
So the business pays for all the bikes. They spend like $3,000 or whatever it takes to...
Something like that. There's a sponsor package that essentially goes into it. And one of their big advantages of it was that you have to go into the business to unlock your bikes. That was an advantage for the business.
You
check out.
So you build a relationship, right.
But one of the disadvantages was that the businesses have to be open for you to get bikes out. So Bicla was really great until the bars closed, essentially. And then it was less useful.
So speaking of business partnerships, just to get back to the issue of, you know, what are we sort of waiting for in Portland in terms of sponsorships, dollars? I know, Michael, you've done some reporting about this and looking at Alta's application and stuff like that. Or, you know, what can you say about what they're looking for in a corporate sponsor? Are they barking up the wrong tree? What kind of people would be interested in this?
I don't know how much this is Alta and how much this is the city, but according to their like 80-page proposal that they filed last year, they're asking for $3,700 per bike from sponsorship for this launch period. And the comparable number, the best that I could figure them out, for Nice Ride in Minneapolis was $1,400 per bike. That's almost a third of that in revenue that they were expecting in Minneapolis, which is like you can't swing a U-lock without hitting a Fortune 500 CEO. And in Denver, it's $2,500 per shared bike. So these are very similar sized cities, similar economies. They're not like tourist destinations like New York and D.C. And we're expecting much more somehow to come from the private sector for this. So I that's not to say that it's not worthwhile, because like City Bike, for example, when they sponsored the New York bike sharing system, the favorable impression number of the number of people who have a favorable impression of Citibank jumped 17 points. That's an amazing, like,
yeah,
result.
That's
for
the,
just,
you
like,
can't ask for that from the best possible ad campaign.
Exactly. And they spent,
know?
What, they spent $6 million over 5 years or something for that?
Which I think from a Citibank perspective is probably a pretty darn good investment.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm really interested. There's a whole bunch of different favorable impression stats that they did.
Yeah.
The whether Citigroup is an innovative company increased 12 points after sponsoring Citibank. That's very precise. It's all very interesting.
Unfortunately, we don't have anything near the size of Citibank in
no.
Portland.
No.
And I've heard that as a concern, and people say, look, we just don't have these massive Fortune 500 companies in Portland. Maybe
we also have up... we have a culture that is far less amenable to corporate sponsorship of things.
That's probably true.
That's something that we were saying with when I worked at the BTA with the Bike Commute Challenge, was the argument like the Bike Commute Challenge could never be the Providence Bike Commute Challenge or the Kaiser Bike Commute Challenge. People would be far less inclined to do it. Like all of the stats on sort of Oregonians and their willingness to engage with a branded corporate sponsored thing is that we're a lot less amenable to an overall broad corporate sponsorship. And so I think really targeting niche sponsorship, like the Timbers sponsoring stations outside of the stadium.
And you can do that. They're going to let people sponsor stations.
Right, which is what we do with the streetcar too, what success, I do not know. But going after very targeted, smaller sponsors and breaking it off rather than looking for these huge whole hog sponsorships is the only way that we're going to be able to pull this off in Portland.
So it seems like we've got two options. We can either up the revenue or we can reduce the cost. Or maybe 3 minutes from now, they're going to announce it. As you're listening to this, you're going to get a notice that they've just announced it. So I don't know.
Right, you're going to push notification
from
your Bike Portland app on your phone.
Well, just
a sponsor.
in terms of going after a sponsor, the difficulty they would have in that conversation would be as they increase the amount of sponsors for the system, there's diminishing returns of the impact each one of those sponsors would get. So you're basically giving them something of less value.
That's why you have to make it geographically representative, though. I mean, I think the real thing is you've got to target it around areas where you want New Seasons gets their New Season spikes next to their Williams location. Geographically focusing sponsorships is the only way that we're going to get this done, because I don't think our citizens are as amenable to large corporate sponsorships, and I don't think we have as many of them available.
I don't think at this point, going back to your comment about not having a citizen committee, I don't think citizens' opinions of sponsorships really going to even come into play. I think they're, at this point, my hunch is that
Alta
are desperate to some extent, and they're getting nervous, and they would take almost whatever they could get.
Right, no, I definitely agree with that at this point. But you know, when we were talking about the many roadblocks this is dealt with, for initially when this was brought up, one of the issues, wasn't there like a city ordinance that didn't allow us to have a certain level of advertising on city sponsored?
Yeah, that's actually what prevented JCDecaux from being one of our from applying for our system. This is a French company that's a big, I think, owned by Clear Channel. It's a large advertising company in France, and that's how they paid
for the Veleep system was by giving Clear Channel a sort of buy all contract.
And they wined and dined Commissioner Adams back in the day. They brought over one of the bikes from Lyon. He had it in his office. They were sort of the top ranked vendor at the time. But they got nervous about that Oregon law about advertising, maybe it's a city ordinance. Either way,
I don't remember.
They got nervous and pulled out. Didn't even apply. They didn't want anything to do with it. But my hunch is, because I haven't heard that really come up from anybody at PBOT, is that there are definitely ways around that. It has something to do with whether it's in the right-of-way and what the right-of-way is, and I think they've pretty much gotten over that.
The right-of-way question then comes down to, right-of-way is a very interesting definition that you have to deal with a lot in transportation. Is getting around this law going to mean that our bike share stations have to be in the pedestrian right-of-way? Does that mean that we're going to be forcing bikes onto the sidewalk in order to get around this advertising law? Do you know?
I have no idea. I think it's safe to say some of the kiosks will be on sidewalks.
Right.
And the sidewalk space will be compromised. There's just no way that they're going to go out
and remove.
Every time you go to any project meeting or talk to anybody at PBOT about planning for bicycling or any transportation project, the last thing they want to do is remove on-street auto parking.
Right.
I don't see them rolling out some 75-station bike share system and that's going to, you know, take up anywhere near that number of on-street auto parking, because that's just going to invite controversy, which they want to avoid. So I think the station location will be super interesting, and I think some of it will be on, you know, sidewalk space.
I've got a question to wrap things up. What are our predictions for local bike sharing? Anything that you think is going to happen about local bike sharing in the next year or 10 years, anything like that? Jonathan?
Well, my prediction is, it's going to happen. They're not going to walk away from this. They've been working on it too long. It's definitely going to go forward within the next few months. They're going to probably announce something, is my hunch. And it's going to work. It's going to be great. We have the smartest people working on this, and it's worked in every other city. I don't see why ours would be different. And I think it's going to change the perception of cycling in Portland and take it to a new place that it hasn't been.
I have much more dire predictions. I think that it's going to take... I do think we'll get it eventually, but I think it's going to be one of those things like critical mass in Portland where we're like, yeah, we don't do that bike thing here. We have other things that we do Portland style. Because it's taken us so long to roll it out and we've been pushing so hard on different sorts of initiatives, that it's gonna take another year plus, I think, to get it rolled out. And by that time, it's going to be considered sort of passé. But I would love to be proved wrong. I would love to see it have the same impact it's had in other cities.
Well, prepare to be proved wrong, because you're totally wrong. My prediction is that... Actually, it's different. I just cheated. My prediction is really that whatever happens with the centralized bike sharing, I think that people are going to try the decentralized bike sharing, and then they're going to realize that nobody uses it because it's so much less flashy and harder to notice. And it's going to be sort of like the buses and rail thing, where you don't notice... rail, you don't notice where a bus goes, you don't understand it in the way that you understand rail. That's my thinking.
I hope that it's the car-to-go of bikes in the future, because I think car-to-go had a pretty transformational impact on low-car life in Portland.
Yep.
And I think I would love to see that bike share is the future of that. But
all right.
I do not have high hopes.
Lily, you've got a bike sharing related low car tip of the month for us.
Yeah, I do, actually. If anybody's planning a trip to Europe and really wants to try out one of the hundreds of bike share systems that there are around Europe, you're going to need a chip and pin credit card. If you have just the traditional American swipe credit card, it won't work. So before you go to Europe, this is just generally recommendable, but absolutely essential if you want to try out Volib or call a bike or anything, call up your bank and ask them to send you a chip version of your card so that you can use it in Europe.
Well, that they do that for free?
It depends on how mean your bank is.
All right. And you've also got some TriMet-related tweets of the month, like we always do.
Yes. So, Dr. Jeff, on Halloween, visitors, can't tell if a Portlander is in costume or in just their normal outfit. Me. Ha ha ha. Joke's on you. You have to live in a boring city. Awkward TriMet, streetcar drivers announces, ladies and gentlemen, I know some of you are skeptical, but all three doors do indeed lead into the same streetcar. Telemachus Rome says, we've hired a medium to contact Casper the Friendly Ghost. We expect Casper to educate the TriMet board on what transparency is all about. And
transparency, oh my, oh, oh.
It's from the TriMet board meeting, no less. And Brockman tweets, whole uneaten cheeseburger on floor of TriMet bus. Catch, it's on the floor. You have no idea how tempted I am.
I would totally go for that. And that's our show. You can subscribe to the show at bikeportland.org/podcast and send us any comments you have at podcast@bikeportland.org.
You can spread the word about the show by searching for Bike Portland on iTunes and leaving a review.
And you can follow at Bike Portland on Twitter and Facebook too.
You can follow me at Anomalily on Twitter.
I'm Jonathan Maz, Bike Portland's publisher.
I'm Mike Anderson, Bike Portland's news editor.
And I'm Lillian Carbake, your podcast producer. Thanks for listening, and remember to exit through the back.
Pass on the left.
And don't forget to thank the bus driver. What can I say? It's a true Quebec invention. Now get him to NDG. Epoch Extension.